Okay, guys, bring it down. Bring it down. Bring it down, everyone. Bring it down. Get more ready. Get more ready.
I'm aware of it. Okay, that was very fast. But the question is, have you been in there for 30 days?
Okay, guys, okay.
Are you a B'nai Ha'ed? Or an Ish Ha'ed?
So, first of all, everyone please say the line of the sugya. I want to continue talking a little bit about Torah Shabbat. Mirat Hashem, next week we're going to segue into tshuva. I already have some former Talmidim saying, Rebbe, when are the tshuva sichot going to begin? Some guys who were here 20 years ago, they want to listen to them. I said, wait a little bit, we'll start. Very famous Kashya in Tosfos, and we talked about it last week in a different context. There are two very different versions of Har Sinai. One version is enthusiasm and excitement and please, kol asher diber Hashem nasa v'nishma, and they're so excited, we want to hear Hashem's voice. And one of them is evidently resistance and fear and concern. Kafal emhar kegigas, and Kodesh Baruch Hu is raising a mountain and threatening us and forcing us to accept his Torah. Which one is it? Is it kol asher diber Hashem nasa v'nishma, or is it kafa? So the real answer to that question is it's both, because sometimes you're really excited about religion, and sometimes not so excited, right? Let's face it, be honest, and you're not always excited to serve a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and part of religious growth is not being excited all the time, but operating based on duty and feeling accompanied with a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and as you get older, it gets a little easier, but don't expect. A lot of growth in yeshiva is debunking expectations in life. I expect to finish Torah this year. Good luck with that. In my 1 year to learn Torah, and Chanukah time, you fully realize that if I'm going to be a Talmud Chacham, it's going to be a lifelong pursuit. It starts this year, but I really have to work hard at it. And the expectation in life, I'm going to work really hard to a certain point. That when I'm 25, my world's going to be perfect. I'll be married, and I'll have a job, and everything will be set. Right? All things I'm struggling to accomplish. And then you realize, life is really not perfect. Life's a struggle. Life's constantly reaction. Life's constantly problem-solving. It's a roller coaster ride. There are ups and there are downs. So it's really important. The sooner that you can try to get past all these expectations you have when you're young, which is fine, is when you're young, you're not living in the real world. You're living in contained spaces. You realize, so another expectation is that you're always going to feel excited to be an Avod Hashem. You won't always. And sometimes you just serve Hashem, even though you're not excited. But the Medrash, and this is what I want to talk about today, the Medrash in Parshas Noach says, it depends what Torah. When Hashem said to Am Yisrael, do you want Torah Shebichsav? Yeah, we're in. We like Torah Shebichsav. Want to go to a B'li text here? Yeah, we want to do that. That's exciting. Text, comparisons, morality, history, theology. Those are the fun. Yes, mark us up. Then Hashem said, but here's Torah Shebalpeh. Whoa, pump the brakes a little. Torah Shebalpeh, first of all, that's asking a lot. That's a big ask. A lot of mitzvos, a lot of averos. whoa, we're not so excited about. And more than that, that's what the Medrash is talking about, not just the amount of mitzvos and averos and the way that it restrains your life and addresses your life, but also the taxing nature of studying Torah Shebalpeh. Torah Shebichsav is, I mean, there are many, many layers to it, but within a relatively short amount of time, you're right there. You know what the text is saying. You've got some inklings about some other ideas. Obviously, it's endless. You can spend an endless amount of time on Maftir Yonah, or you can spend an amount of time on the three parak Sefer in Tanakh. But essentially, you have some grounding. You feel like, I understand, I'm latched on, and I want to develop it more in Baruch Hashem. You have great, great opportunity in Yeshiva this year to see really cutting-edge learning in Tanakh. It's reshaping Torah across the world, but certainly in Eretz Yisrael. I told you before, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, there were literally 5,000 people in this building listening to Shiurim for an entire week, trying to study Tanakh. People who 30, 40 years ago wouldn't have been learning at all. So it's really exciting to be part of a Torah revolution. But learning Gemara is really hard. It's really difficult. It's difficult because it's so eternal. It's so sweeping. It's difficult because until you work for hours, you don't have to make ground level. And you can either be traumatized by that and run away from it. And then Am Yisrael did run away from it to a degree. And Hashem said, okay, I understand the Torah Shebichsav, kol asher diber Hashem nasa v'nishma. Torah Shebalpeh, you're not so excited. So Hashem, whatever it means, he forced us. I don't want to get into the theological and moral considerations of being forced, but the contrast between the enthusiasm of Torah Shebichsav and the resistance of Torah Shebalpeh. So I think many of us are right at that stage. I mean, I've been learning Torah Shabbat for a while, but many of you, this is a bit of a wake-up call. It's really hard to learn Torah Shabbat, and it's really chaotic, and it's really a random amount of details, and you have to work hours and hours, and you're starting to see how many hours it would take just to get ground level, and that could either be a deterrent, and I'll do it for a year in yeshiva, and then it's really very meaningless in my life, or it can be an attraction, and say, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. And the reason that it's so long and extensive is because it's detailed, right? Go figure. I mean, just think about all the psukim in this week's parsha. Almost every one pasuk represents reams and reams of halacha. So the Torah writes, I don't know about gittin. There's a paragraph about gittin. Would you know from the pasuk how to deliver a get? Of course not. To read all Maseches Gittin. It's not just to know practically how to deliver a get, but when we're studying get, we're studying marriage. We know how HaKadosh Baruch Hu envisions marriage. And by dismantling a marriage, and what does it take to dismantle a marriage? But not theoretically, to sit in Starbucks and sip your coffee with your friend and say, what does Hashem think about marriage? What do you think about marriage? But assembling hundreds and thousands of details, trying to spin them into concepts as we're trying to do. Oh, the reason that get needs this is because marriage is this. The reason that get is defined by this is because marriage is defined as such. And then you know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will in a real, thorough, rigorous, granular way, not just, I know Hashem's will that he wants a man to divorce his wife when they end the marriage rather than kicking her out of the house, the generalities. And that's what the same medrash, the beautiful medrash in Noach that I'm pretty much quoting from. If anyone wants to actually read the medrash, I can send it. It's about 2 pages of glorification, an ode to Torah Shebaal Peh. And Torah Shebaal is clawing, the medrash says. The generalities, general ideas. Torah Shebaal Peh is prepped. Is details and details and details, and of course every detail is a hieroglyph. Every detail is a code to some concept. I remember Rav Lichtenstein talking about Torah Shebaal Peh, and he says it's so chaotic and it's so disorganized, he feels compelled to learn Torah Shebaal Peh out of chivalry to Chazal, as if he's rescuing a damsel in distress, that he has to take Torah Shebaal Peh and make it organized and make it coherent and turn this, and Rav Aaron really made it coherent. That's really the love of my life. How can I train people in Torah Shebaal Peh, make them appreciate Torah Shebaal Peh? That to me is probably, if you're honest, one of the real deterrents in high school, one of the real problems in high school, and if it's not solved and remedied, it can really bleed into adult communities. In high school, let's face it, again, some of the high schools are improving, some less, but how many high school boys writ large, I don't teach girls as much, I was talking about boys, how many people are really able to explain Gemara, why they learn Gemara, what meaning it has. And at the best case, you enjoy learning, but you don't know why it's important. Worst case, you just find it very boring, very tiresome, very onerous, and you just do it because you're a good kid. You want to get a good mark. But like as soon as I leave the framework, I'll stop. And okay, if you go to a good yeshiva, you'll still learn Gemara. But once you leave yeshiva, at some point, you have to be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some ways even more deeply in terms of Opeh. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is just generalities, and generalities are very amorphous and very, very abstract. But the details, this is scientific. Let's gather as many details as we can and try to define Hachal Shechina. Obviously, we just gathered one set of details. We could spend 5 years gathering details from all across us and trying to define how HaKadosh Baruch Hu views the laws of neighbors, and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu views the laws of cities, and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu views the laws of partners and shufas and every sector of human experience. But it's really, really hard. It's really challenging. And Medrash says, the only people that learn Torah Shebaal Peh, this is a beautiful Medrash, says, if you love Hashem, you learn Torah Shebaal Peh. Because you're willing to subject yourself to the hardship, and it's not just the physical toil, but it's also, to me, it's not just the physical toil. I like working. I know what it is to work. But mentally, it's just very exhausting. I mean, it's really hard. I've spent the last 2 weeks, as you have, trying to make sense of Hesed Gria at my level, and I still feel like I'm scratching the surface. I still feel like there's this venue I didn't look at. There's this horizon I'd like to open. I'd like to spend a little more time exploring this. I know that every time I turn a page, I'm really revealing a whole universe that I'm just not able. And it can be very mentally exhausting. But as I told you yesterday in the shiur, you want to wrestle with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want to get into the ring with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and feel that contact with Hashem. We'll talk a little bit about the Sefer HaTanya. Mirz Hashem and Kislev. We'll learn a little Tanya. And that literally clasping HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hugging HaKadosh Baruch Hu like you hug a melech. That's the language in the Tanya. When you're learning Torah, you're clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like you're hugging someone. So it's going to be very overwhelming because you're outmatched. And I want to give you encouragement and I want to give you chizuk. And it takes a while. And please don't check out just because it's harder than math and it's harder. You're mature enough to be able to translate level of difficulty into level of meaning. When you're young, level of difficulty deters you and impedes you. As you get older, you realize, oh, if something's really difficult, it probably means it's more meaningful. The experiences that are difficult in life shape us. Experiences that are easy in life don't shape us. Things that you earn, you care for. Things that you get free, you just discard easily. Easy come, easy go. That was Rabbi Akiva's whole discovery when he stood there by the rock and he saw the water shaping the rock. What was his kal vachomer? Everyone knows the first part of his statement. No one knows the second. What did he say? If water is soft and can shape a rock, what was the conclusion? Torah, which is kasha kibarzel, it's really hard, it certainly can shape. And he had a kal vachomer. And latent in that kal vachomer is the level of difficulty, is the level of transformation. If something is really easy, then it doesn't really transform you. If something is difficult and takes your, not just your skills. These are the skills. See, imagine the skills of floating in air. They're just loosely attached. What about me? What about to solve something difficult, to overcome some challenge, it takes me, not skills. Skills are to nail something into the wall. Skills are to dissect a math equation. Skills are apply skills, apply intellect. But you, it's struggle and care and investment and work and commitment. Those are emotions. Those are passions. Those are deeper than skills. So at some point, again, you're not going to see this very early, and I hope that some degree of trust sets in. You say, okay, I trust my rebbeinu. This is, but in terms of setting out a horizon, I really hope that everyone in this room will get that appreciation of Torah Shebaal Peh. And even if you never learn Torah Shebaal Peh again, what's really, really important is to appreciate who Chazal were. Because until you read Torah Shebaal Peh, they just seem like some antique, outdated, ancient rabbis who are walking around with goats practicing medieval or pre-medieval medicine. And it just seems such a quaint world. And that's not my world. My world is the world of technology and automobiles and internet. Okay, so I'm studying it because it's my heritage. It's my heritage. Yellow pages in my history. And that's really, if you ask me, again, we're shooting ahead of ourselves, but I just want to try to make it real. One of the real issues dividing our community now that really we're suffering with is kavod chazal and kavod of who this world was and samchus of chazal. And until you understand who chazal were and are able to draw relevance from their world to your world, then, of course, you can accept their authority, but it's not as resonant as if you understand how deeply committed to Talmud Torah, how they transformed Hashem's will, how they translated Hashem's will from generalities to the specifics that apply to every day, how brilliant they were, how they walked into a room and they talked about a case like Shnei Batim, Shnei Tzidur, Shesarabim, and that one case incorporated three or four different elements of the question, and how brilliant a Funer of Chizda were to think about this case, and that was just a 5-minute throwaway while they were moving on to some other case. And I said, oh, okay, these are not going to say they were malachim, because they weren't malachim, but they were just at a different level. They were just, we're playing checkers, they're playing chess. There's no other way to describe it. And all of a sudden, to start treating them as equals, and I hold this, and they hold that, but they weren't, they're human beings, and they're still human beings without Nivu and Ruach HaKodesh. That would be dishonest, because Ruach HaKodesh ended before they arrived, but their level, which is in such a different plane, the comprehension, trust me, I saw this. I saw someone who knew Torah like a Tana. It's the only way I can describe what we can see. He knew Torah like a Tana. I don't know if the same sweep, I don't think he had the authority. What do you mean he knew Torah like a Tana? I'm sorry to be so elaborative, but it's interesting. Okay, many people today, probably most people, when they learn, so they'll read the Gemara, and then they'll read what Achronim have said. What does the Bukhanan say? What does the Stipler say? What does he say? Most people. I imagine many of you are Rebbeim. Some of you have Rebbeim like that who gave you what he said. Which is part of the great Talmid Chacham lived over the last 150 years, more or less. Rav Lichtenstein demanded of us, now listen carefully to my statement, to simulate what the Achronim were doing. What I mean is, how did the Berachas Shmuel arrive at what he said? He read the Rishonim and he built his models. So Rav Aaron wanted us to do that same thing. He wanted us to read Rishonim, not just to read Berachas Shmuel, prepared microwavable every time. And I remember sitting in the base medrash in YU, having long conversations with my friends who were Talmidim of Rav Shechter, who didn't want this friends of mine, like Rabbi Sabalovsky and Rabbi Simon, who are currently rabbanim in YU, and they said, why should you, your Torah is never going to be equivalent to Rabbi Chanan's. And the answer is, of course not. And Rav Aaron's answer, I thought, was, but he wanted us to personalize Torah and be involved, not just in reading how other people have developed one out of 50 potential models, but to insert ourselves into the process and think about all the models. And there's advantages, disadvantages to each. You can obviously detect them very easily. But I can, at this point, I can pretty much simulate. What I'm doing with you is, I didn't take any of the last 6 or 7 shiurim from an Achron. And so this is the stipend, is what he says. And this, I learned the whole as much as I could, and I tried to build these models in my head. But I can't simulate a Rishon. I simply can't. How did Rishonim learn? They didn't have Rishonim. How did the Ramban learn? He read Gemaras. He took 5 sugyos, and he knew Torah well enough that he started to develop ideas. So I can simulate an Achron poorly, but I can simulate. I can simulate a Rishon. Rav Moshe Lichtenstein can. I was his chavrusa. And he knows Torah so well and so innately, and you'll see when he gives shiur, when you understand the shiur clearly, he doesn't read Rishonim first, like Achronim did, like I do. He reads 5 or 6 sugyos, then he develops ideas, and then he says, okay, what does the Rashba say, what does the Ramban say, and he starts playing one off from the other. So I can't do that. I know in my life I'll never leap out of that league. I'm as much as I can learn Torah, I'll still always be operating, again, not as good as, but mechanism. My mechanics are going to be the mechanics that I'm going to use reading Rishonim. Rav Moshe's mechanics will be reading Gemaras. I promise you, Rav Lichtenstein wasn't reading Gemaras. Rav Lichtenstein had such a panoramic view of Torah that he was just thinking, what are some topics that Hashem wants of us? Like, he wrote a Sefer on Kedusha. Like, which Gemara do you start with? Kedusha. Which Gemara do you start with? What's the role of Kedusha? Of Tefillin, Mezuzah, Korbanos, like, you just have to have this concept of what the concept of Kedusha is, and then you pick ideas from the pool. It's like you're standing 10,000 feet up looking at 1,000,000 Lego pieces, and you say, okay, well, what do I want to build? Here's a Lego piece, here's a Lego piece, here's a Lego piece. That's how well they need Torah. That's how Chazal need Torah. Because they didn't have Rishonim. They didn't have Gemara. They just said, okay, let's talk about Shiluach HaKen. Let's talk about, and let's make connections. It's amazing to me to think about that, because I could spend 500 lifetimes of mine, and I'll probably never break out of the Achron league in terms of how my mind works. And then for me to imagine 2 levels beyond, I simply can't imagine it. So someone wants to ask me, why do I believe? What's the source of my faith? Which is an interesting question. So I told them, well, I met Rav Lichtenstein, and I met someone who just was so transcendent, intellectually, morally, ethically, as a person. I could never just imagine ever becoming like him. But what made it interesting is when he described Rabbi Soloveitchik to me, who he met, I met him, but not the same way Aaron met him, he described Rabbi Soloveitchik to me in the same terms that I saw Rabbi Lichtenstein. Rabbi Soloveitchik to Rabbi Lichtenstein was Rabbi Lichtenstein to me. Like the way I felt about Rabbi Lichtenstein, Rabbi Lichtenstein felt about Rabbi Soloveitchik. And Rabbi Aaron told me that when Rabbi Soloveitchik told him about Rabbi Chaim, so Rav Soloveitchik described Rav Chaim in the way that Rav Lichtenstein described the Rav, in the way that I described Rav Lichtenstein to you. And then Rav Chaim told the Rav about the Beis HaLevi, he described, so I'm imagining, I can't imagine ever transcending Rav Aaron, and yet Rav Aaron talked about that level above him in ways that I saw Rav Aaron. And that person who told that Rav Aaron saw that way, so all of a sudden, I don't have to figure it all out on my own. I don't say, oh, what I believe in is because of what my little puny mind and experience has proven, and if I can't prove everything, I'm able to rely on people that transcend my experience and accept their delivered truths. And part of Emunah is Masaran, and being able to meet great people and connect to great people. And so I'm trying to connect you to the great people who are both here now and who were in this building. So Torah Shabbat Peh is a way to connect to great people. I want these people to come alive to you. I want you to know who Rav Huna was. I want you to know who Rav Chanan was. I want you to know who Rav Chaim was. I want you to personalize it. Sometimes it just feels like voices in the Gemara. Who is Abai? Who is Rabbah? How are they? That these should become our buddies. These should become our posse for the next couple of months, and to really immerse ourselves into their world, because their world was so saturated in Hashem's will. If we connect to that world, not just to an idea here, all of a sudden we're connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so hopefully the next couple of days we'll talk a little bit more about Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's really important that you stake out your agenda. You're spending 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day learning Torah Shebaal Peh. I say it's not just skills and not just how well you can read a Gemara. That's silly. But can you be able to find a Kodesh Baruch Hu behind it and connect through these people and make that your will? I promise you, if you're able to, it's a gift of life. It's a gift of life because it opens so many doors to your religion. It makes so many things meaningful. What's the power of minhag? Why we follow? Every time, okay? Really, seriously, guys, I'll give you one example because I know it's on your mind. Every time you keep a second day Yom Tov in Teaneck or in Baltimore, wherever you're keeping it, that's where you live, you should be saying, this is silly. What the heck am I doing? We know exactly when. Why am I spending another day without a shower? Well, I recommend you take a shower. Why am I spending another day without a shower? And your answer is because I'll make gezeros and takanos. And I promise you, when Mashiach comes and we reassemble the Beit Din, the first thing to go is going to be the second day. I promise you, but we just don't have a Beit Din. And the integrity of the system demands we don't just walk away from what Chazal determined. Or to put it another way, at 4 o'clock today, I am going to violate a Mishnah in Masechah Sota. How could I violate a Mishnah in Masechah Sota? I believe so deeply in the authority of Chazal. The Mishnah in Sota says, Kol ha-melamed es bito Torah, ki'ilam melamdo tiflus. If you teach your daughter, I'm not teaching my daughter today, but a lot of maybe your friends, some of your friends, as you know, in Megalos at 4 p.m. today, I'm teaching Torah Shabbat to them. How could I do that? The answer is as follows. The Gemara in Sota doesn't say Aser Lalame Bito Tara. They never made a Gezerah. If they made a Gezerah, they made a Takana. Aser Lalame is Bito Tara. That is inalienable. Times can change, but the authority of Chazal can't be reversed until you have the device, namely a Beis Din, to reverse and repeal it. We don't have a Beis Din, we're stuck. So many times when people have a hard time with Judaism, they don't realize it's like me taking a Torah, me taking you to a game. Okay? Any good teams you guys still follow? The Jets and the Giants have already lost. Good teams. Calgary, are they good? Are they still a team? So the Calgary Flames. So Calgary Flames, thank you. Calgary Flames, and you tell your friends in Gush how great the Calgary Flames are. You invite them all to Calgary. You give them all coffee mugs. They come on. My ticket, I'll take you to a game at the Flame Center?
Saddle Dome.
At the what?
Saddle Dome.
Saddle Dome. Okay, a little too cowboy, a little too kitschy for me. Okay, Saddle Dome, where all the cowboys go to. Okay, we're cowboys in Calgary. To take everyone to the Saddle Dome, and within 5 minutes, they're two-star players, Oleg Kolakchuk and Golubchik's cousin, and Thomas Udin from Sweden. They got thrown off, and it's now 3-on-5. Two guys thrown into the penalty box, 3-on-5, and the opposing team, the Rangers. The Rangers are plastering them. The opposing team are plastering them. So everyone in Bush says, you told us they're a good team. So yeah, but they're playing shorthanded. It's 3-on-5. You can't expect them to win. They're playing 3-on-5. Judaism is playing shorthanded. We don't have a Beis Din. We don't have a Melech. We don't have a Navi. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have the Urim Turumim. We're left with incredible. It's Torah. And we still have Torah and Halacha. But half of our team has gone missing. So, Judaism, how come there's any guna, how could Judaism allow women to be chained, which is a terrible crime? I'm not saying it's a worse crime possible. The only time I bullied a Talmud, I'm not a bullyish guy, the only time I bullied a Talmud, bully bull, is he came and he was going through a difficult divorce, he was married in Israel, and I was helping him through the process, and he came and said he needs to speak with me, so he sat in my backyard, and he says, Rebbe, my wife's family, actually my soon to be ex-wife, being very, very rigid and very, very litigious, and they're asking for all sorts of demands. I'm scheduled to give the get on Thursday in Petah Tikva. This is Monday in my backyard. I'm thinking maybe I should hold off for the get till I get my demands met. So I looked him in the eye and I said, it's now Monday. If I don't get a text at 8:30 Thursday morning, this is before WhatsApps, I don't get an SMS at 8:30 Thursday morning from you that you gave the get, this is the last time I will ever say a word to you. You hear me? Last time. You will never see my face, and I will disown you as a person. Because once you let things settle in, spite and anger, and then it becomes really, you have to nip things in the bud. I said, I'll be there for you after the get. I understand your needs, but you do not use a get to manipulate someone else. Hashem gave you the right to give a get. It's your responsibility once the marriage is ended. Give it again in due time. So he texted me Thursday morning at 8:30, the gate is given. I said, okay, now let's talk. I'll help you out. I'll try my best. Chassid, it's the worst crime possible. But it's not a reflection of the deficiency of halacha. It's a reflection of the forlorn state of Jewish society. You know what happened in the days of Chazal if a man dared refuse to get to his wife? Anyone know? They would invite the guy to Beis Din, invite the wife to Beis Din, tell the wife, you sit in the waiting room, and they would say, Molly, her name is Molly, you can get married in about 5 minutes. Go find someone on a J-date or something. Because you can get married in 5 minutes, because either you'll be a grusha, because he'll give the get, and if you're not a grusha in 5 minutes, you know what? You'll be an almana. Either way, you're free. So go on J-date and start sliding, because you can get married in about 5 minutes, because we're going to force the get, or you know what? We'll schedule a burial and then a wedding. But either way, you're free. We don't really have that potential today. Of course, some rabbanim still feel we do, and they're sitting in federal penitentiaries for kidnapping people and trying to... We don't have that. We're living democratic societies. So we're living with so little. And so going back to the teaching, Chazal never made a takana, don't teach women. If they made that takana, are you kidding? Violate Chazal? Chalil v'chas. Chazal gave a commentary. In the year 300, women were hysterical idiots. They had no education. They weren't given education. They were just baby machines tied down to the home. So teaching these people Darash Baal Peh was ridiculous, counterproductive, was opening up possibilities for distortion. Baruch Hashem today, women have education, and they're just as capable as we are in terms of the mental capacity to study Torah, so we should spread Torah. Because I'll never said asa. With the second day of Yontif, they didn't say, oh, it's nice to think about it. They made a takana. Minagam was saying, we're going to make a takana to keep the second day of Yontif. Every day, we keep the second day of Yontif. Every year, we're reaffirming our belief in Chazal. This is something we take seriously. Heck, let me go one step further. Let me up the ante. This year, you won't experience it. Holiest day of the year. Everyone's in shul. Everyone's in Beit Knesset. Rosh Hashanah. Yom HaDin. Your future depends on it. And if not for the shofar, it's going to go south pretty quickly. But this year, Rosh Hashanah, not this year, but let's say your year, it's Shabbos. And you know why we don't blow shofar on Shabbos? Who can tell me? Because Rabbah made a gzera. You're kidding me? Carry? The carry issue? Raise your hand if you live in a city without an Erev. I said city. Raise your hand if you live in a city. In a city without an Erev. Carrying a shofar on Shabbos? Carry it away. And you know what? The problem is not that you carry it to shul. Because what was the real gezer? You'll put the shofar in shul before Shabbos. Not a problem. What's the reason? Because when you're blowing, you make a mistake and you'll have to carry the shofar to find an expert. Raise your hand if you daven in a shul without 50 experts and not blow shofar. I'm sure every shul has plenty of experts. Many people would think they're experts. No one's carrying shofars anywhere. But there's a rabbi, they did. So this is Yom HaDin. And you need to come pack it with all the ammunition, all the ammo you can. I was going to say, oh, my biggest ammo, let's put it on the side. Because there's some outdated takana. The answer is, you're saying, Samchus Chazal is so important that it overtally shofar. And believe me, when I daven in Rosh Hashanah, the falls and Shabbos, I'm very aware of this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't have a shofar today. I can't sway your opinion with the shofar, but you know what I have? I'm sticking to Chazal. I'm deleting shofar. I'm suspending shofar because of the samchus of Chazal. That's a powerful, maybe even more powerful than a shofar. So what does it mean? Who is this world? Make this world real. Climb into their world. Learn the way they thought. Learn how they snapped their fingers. And work a little first. It takes a lot of work. It's really, really hard. And you should know how many hours I prepare for shir. I wouldn't try my best to give you the clarity. I could just come in here and write. I just feel like I have to respect Chazal more. And I'm teaching who they were. Then I have to show them some respect and try to give you as much of an edge. I take this job very, very seriously. I could come in here and just read a stipler Rav and tell you the stipler. And what does he say? It's hard. Every sugya that I'm teaching is a sugya, not this year. I mean, I've learned this before. But I sweated over it. This is sugyas I worked that I tried to capture and conquer. And so hopefully the level of difficulties is wrapped up with the level of yield. Okay, on that note, short share today, because I want you to get to the next sugya. It's going to be a lot easier three lines, a couple of Rishonim, the classic sugya, not these sugyas all over the place. Let's review what we spoke about. Let's see where we are. We'll have a more thorough review Sunday morning, Mirtz Hashem. Sunday morning, 8:30, Mirtz Hashem. Everyone enjoy your El Shabbos. Is anyone staying in for Shabbos that needs meals? Anyone staying in on lunch for Shabbos? Okay. Meals? Oh, yeah, the yeshiva's open. Okay, but generally, just to know, even on an out Shabbos when the yeshiva's closed, from time to time, I know it's going to sound crazy, like who in their right mind would want to stay in the yeshiva on an out Shabbos that we could be free. But you'll start to see that it gets very tiring to go for Shabbos, and you're working hard, and you're just like crumpling up in your bed and sleeping off and all. So there are plenty of meals available, even on an out Shabbos at my house, and you should have said any of you who are staying in an out job, just let me know. Let you be on from China. So he's in charge of meal distribution. So. Okay, on that note, I should mention to you, first of all, we're working really hard on that now to make sure that every one of you has a home meal for Rosh Hashanah. So there are four meals, but everyone's going to be invited to some of these. It's actually pretty impressive with that. And on the count of the list, about 600 meals that guys eat out in the yeshiv. Not, you know, 600 meals. There's the meals offered because, oh, it's an Rosh Hashanah, you go from one place to another. So there are plenty of meals available. Everyone's going to have at least one meal. Of course, those of you who have contacts because of your parents, so you start, I'll get three meals. I'm trying to bet guys become nauseating. I got four. I got six invitations. Who needs one? So just learn to live with them and tolerate them. Next year, you'll be the annoying people telling you how many meals you got this day. So just then, you got your one or two meals. Second of all, I should mention this because I saw some people, again, it's not about me, so I'm happy I'm mentioning it earlier. I don't know how many people I can host this Shabbos, but please, you know, come to your meal with some flowers, a bottle of wine, some cake or something. And very often, you want to find out who else is going, and they say, okay, you know, pick a bottle of wine, I'll chip in with you. That doesn't mean you should have to come with gifts. This isn't like some, you know, Arabic, you know, king, we're visiting the bazaar, and we all have to come bearing gold trinkets. Just mean, you know, just to show you care, not to show up and course and say, okay, bye-bye, see you later. Thank you for letting me come and have an orgy with your house. Okay, where's the pasta? Bring it over. You just want to show that you care about it, so bring something to the house. If you really want to taste to like, okay, listen to me carefully, okay? Don't take me out of context. Stock up on a couple bottles of wine in your room, and then leave them. So you have them ready. Oh, I'm invited, so there. Or sometimes parents send kids with like these little wine covers or little tchotchkala that you can hand out one by one and get invited out. But just know you'll be getting a lot of invitations, especially in Rosh Hashanah, so just be prepared to, you know, get a little honey or something with these little silly little honey bags. Okay, Alex.
Are there any wines that you recommend?
Okay. Make sure we're not recording here.